I knew that we were supposed to love God and love Jesus. And I did. I had a connection with him. But it wasn't until I went through some pretty traumatic events in my early 20s where I realized that, A, Jesus was with me. And he liked who he had made me to be. Not the sinful desires, but the desires he put in me were part of who he made me to be. And that part of following him was fostering those things. And that there was joy and gladness, you know, that Christian hedonism idea. That was revolutionary for me.
All right, welcome to Chasing Leviathan. Today I have with me the boss and Bron, those are their official titles, for Candid Goat Agency, Becky Sue Weary, my wife, and Cindy Cowherd, my sister-in-law. Becky Sue is very much in charge of web work and just makes sure that the Candid Goat Digital Agency runs. And Cindy is the copywriting and SEO guru. But today we're going to be examining their personal lives, their personal journeys. And the question we want to cover today is, how does rural and urban spirituality differ? And what can we learn from this difference? So ladies, the first thing I would ask is, give us a little bit about yourselves. You know, feel free to go back and forth as you talk about, why are you guys uniquely qualified to talk about this?
I think it's very important to note, this is Becky Sue, by the way, that Cindy and I are sisters. 10 years difference between us. Cindy is the oldest. And then there are two boys between us, 2 years difference between each of those. And then 6 years after that.
Bonus Becky.
Bonus Becky, which was my title and the name of one of my cows to lead us into this discussion about rural versus urban. So part of the interesting part as we dive in is that Cindy and I, we lived together for a little bit when she moved to Memphis, and we've both lived in cities ever since, growing up in Southeast Alabama, about 30 to 45 minutes from the closest, you know, Walmart, right? I guess it was 20 minutes from the Walmart, 30 from the Target. If we want to get 10 technical,
initially, we moved further away.
That's right.
Yes, but that was more my experience than yours.
Exactly, so. Because our childhoods were
quite a bit different.
And I think it's important to note that we're not doing a systematic treatment of this, more just delving into your own personal experiences. So what we're going to be talking about is Christianity. I think there's interesting things about that, interesting observations we can do about, I think there's some interesting observations that we can do about spirituality in general, but obviously this is going to be within the context of Christianity because you guys are from rural southeastern Alabama. It's not like there's a whole lot of other, there are, but there's not a lot of other spirituality presence. So, I mean, definitely, like, compared to somewhere like Orlando, compared to somewhere like even Memphis, I mean, cities tend to have, maybe that's where I'm wrong. Maybe this is where you can talk about that. But before we get into these very spicy alternatives, apparently, tell us a little bit about you guys growing up. You've mentioned there's a 10-year gap. You grew up. Your address is in a town of how big is it? You're in Newville, right? Well, or you were in Newville.
That's my parents' address. Again, this is where our experiences differ. I actually grew up in the community of Ewell, which doesn't have an address. There's no post office box there, but it was a little closer to town. And our town was a little different because there was a army base located nearby. So there was a little bit more diversity, I think, than some rural places. For instance, where our grandparents, my mama and my papa and my meemaw and my big papa lived, that is a much more rural area than where we were initially. But when we moved out when I was 15, so 3 years from leaving the house, and when Becky was five, I think, we moved to Newville, where we had suddenly 23 acres and room for horses and eventually cows. And that was definitely a different community than even where I was, because there were houses closer together. We had some neighbors growing up that I don't think you had. Was there a single kid near you?
Nope.
And then we all left you, so you're welcome for that.
Great fun. I was friends with the birds.
The funny thing is, though, you had way more friends than we did, because you made a friend in kindergarten, and I don't think I made a friend till seventh grade. So
your pickings are slim, and it really does depend. And again, rural communities differ across the nation. You know, there's different flavors, right?
Right.
Ours was pretty interesting. I mean, yeah. And the friend book piece is... Yeah, that was an uphill thing for all of us, I think, but more so for you guys, for sure.
Yeah, there were some family dynamics as well as like the actual community. I think our family, just based on my observations having moved away, was more settled in the community and more a part of a community once they moved to that more rural setting. We knew some of our neighbors, but I don't remember feeling connected to anybody that lived near us except for... When I was way younger, there was a family, the Webbs, that lived across the street who also went to our church. Mm. But, I mean, I don't... Even that felt a little distant compared to some of what I've heard you talk about.
Yeah, and I would say my friends weren't locality close to me. Mm. They were more based in the school that we went to. And I think I just lucked out a little bit. Or sovereigned out, if you want to make that a verb. That's awful. I'm so sorry. Let it be known. These are two of my favorite people sitting around the table. So it may just...
Let it be known.
Let it be known. The jokes may be a little more groan-worthy. So, or bad puns, whatever.
Groan-worthy works.
That's a good word.
I will groan a lot.
Are you saying this because you like us? The jokes are going to be worse? Because I don't think that's what's determining that the jokes are groan-worthy.
Thanks, Beach. Thank you.
Are you just freer to be who you are?
I'm just freer. Freer like the bird.
Can you give me... So we've talked a little bit around and kind of gotten this idea of... isolation, which is going to be more common in a rural setting. Or you can have it in an urban setting, but it's going to look different. It's going to be alone in the middle of a bunch of people versus, you know, literally you were friends with the birds. And
I was not friends with the birds, but I didn't have neighbors. So. My friends, we'd have to plan for them, you know, come out to the farm. And it was fun. Like, we do, you know, stupid stuff in the woods, but that sounded awful. Like, set up fireworks and stuff, you know? Like, we just play. Like, we were kids.
If you wanted to help somebody understand what it's like to be in a small church, and if you can even talk about the size of those churches, but, I mean, if you want to describe the church, that's fine, but I think people would really connect with some clear stories, and that's maybe where we could even start talking about the difference. What are some just clear experiences that are different in an urban context?
I will say this, and I don't think you had this experience. This isn't so much like a story about one thing that happened as much as it is just kind of this was an overall thing that happened. As a teenager, we didn't have a youth group consistently. And I don't think we had one until much later. And not that a youth group is necessarily I think there's even some urban churches that don't necessarily have a youth group per se, but activities to foster community in teenagers, maybe. We didn't have anyone to kind of do that until later. And there was a couple that did it for a while, and then they stopped, and then they brought in some others. And I just never clicked well with the youth group. I remember, like, even the leaders just feeling like, because I was backstory, I was awkward and didn't have a lot of friends. Just not feeling connected to them or even noticed, and feeling even more distant from everybody else because that we suddenly had a group and I just didn't feel like I was a part of it. And I think that's, you know, having lived in a city in an urban environment since then, I think the more people you have, the more opportunity you have to find your tribe, so to speak. Those who were kind of connected and plugged in and had that community together in a rural setting, I think were very close. And I think there's a beauty to that. It was just not my personal experience. And not all of that was church related. Some of that was family dynamics too, and just me being awkward. But that was something that was a lot different, I think, than what I've experienced since then, that sense of community.
It's funny. I disagree. I thought you were the coolest person who walked the earth when I was a kid.
I had you fooled.
You had me fooled. Oh, man. It's so interesting because after I didn't think about the fact that you only that you had two churches that you went to as a kid in your in your upbringing, and I only had the one. And so I imagine, even as you're talking about the youth group experience, that started to codify when I was entering high school, where it became very consistent. There was a formal youth pastor. We had actual events. And I think that's a huge portion why I had a different experience. A couple of things that come to mind, and my background is, you know, after I graduated college, I decided to move to even a more rural area in the middle of nowhere, Wisconsin.
Graduate high school.
High school. That's what I meant. Yeah. Thank you.
It's my job to tell you when you're wrong.
Well, you're killing it. It's true. She's
sisters.
So it's interesting because as I entered adulthood, I got to see other very small rural churches. And PJ, you asked about the size of those. And I think it's important to note that not everybody in a rural community goes to church. The ones that do tend to be very, you know, it's committed. And I think the same can be true in urban areas. It's easier to know where people stand because there's not as many people, right? And they're, and I could be wrong in that. Anyway, you asked for stories. I'm getting off. So the two stories that came to my mind are, and they're related to the theological implications of a small community. I remember going to, I remember asking a question, and then, as Cindy mentioned, the church and the schools were very intertwined. And I asked about why the Westcott and Hort was a bad textual source. It was a bad
nerd
source.
Nerd alert.
Yes. So
it's a Greek manuscript.
It's a Greek manuscript, and we were learning about how the Bible came to be. Right. And that was really fascinating to me because I wanted to understand the history of why this was, you know, you're handed a belief system by your parents, but they're, and I think everybody goes through this spiritual journey where they say, is this really true? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. Are we just crazy? And when you're in a smaller environment, you know, there's not as large of a community, and you know, the world is a pretty huge place. You wonder, you're like, okay, I got to figure out if I actually believe this, right? So, and there are layers to that. There's a spiritual side. For me, there's also an intellectual side. I did have some scenarios that led me to an actual, you know, that emotional spiritual encounter with Jesus where I said, okay, this, I do think there's something here. And I saw my mom especially, and my mama live things out in a way that I was like, that people don't normally do that. People don't normally act in this tough of a situation like this. I think there's something to what they're saying, but I couldn't put it into terminology. And I remember being so excited to learn about, okay, why are there 66 books in the Bible? Why is this the way that it is? Why do we have this as our authority? Like, I don't understand it. And so I really wanted to answer those questions for myself. And so we started learning about, you know, manuscripts and where those came from and yada, yada, yada. And obviously there's philosophical underpinnings too, that oftentimes in a rural church, you don't necessarily understand why certain thought patterns are the way they are. You know, you're like, they're operating from a very modernist, you know, perspective of funneling through information and all those different types of things. And I'm sure I'm murdering some of these terms, so I'm so sorry, PJ.
All of this is good.
Yeah, I have the stamp of approval. Anyway, so I asked about the Westcott and Hoyer. I was like, but why is it a bad manuscript? And there wasn't an answer. And that actually drove me to, ironically enough, Cindy studied Greek in college too. It drove me to
nerd alert.
I wanted to understand how the Bible came to be. And so I ended up studying Greek and minored in it in college. And so that drove me to answer those questions, but it made me realize, and the same thing, you know, we came from a family that was staunch, hardcore King James only. Like, there it is. You know, this is the way. To quote Mandalorian. And so I was like, but why is this the way? And there are certain knowledge, and I don't mean this in a critical way, and I think the internet has changed that, but the internet was just coming around when I was a kid, right? So before that, you operated based on your community, and your community was small, and so you worked with what you had. And so I think the churches really showed that in many ways, because in the urban environment, it's the knowledge hub, and then it stretches out or it spins out, and people come in and they preach and they teach and they listen, and you're again just it's the same thing with farming and different things. You use what you have, both from a physical and knowledge standpoint, and it makes for some very intelligent. There's some of the most intelligent people. And I feel so honored because I talk to my mom, like, I don't know how to do that. Like, I grew up with you and she's amazing. But, you know, there's also things where, the breadth of knowledge is it's just different, but you also have to have a hunger to search for it out. So I'm going to stop my diatribe there and let Cindy.
So this is a bit of a tangent, but when you were talking about, looking up things for yourself and reading, and then also your minor in Greek, which I didn't know you had. I thought, oh, we are the same. Because I too went through this period in my high school years where, and this wasn't anything that the church did or that I learned there, where I was reading like the Case for Christ and trying to make sure that my faith was my faith and not the faith of anyone else. It was super important to me. And it's interesting that we didn't do a lot of that sort of apologetic work. It was just, this is the way it is. And, you know, you have to be in the center of God's will and not deviate from it, which is a terrifying concept.
Don't deviate.
Don't deviate. One mistake can ruin you.
So this brings me to a question I have for you. Were you finished or did you want to?
Oh, I'm finished now.
Okay. Okay. That sounds like you're coming to the end of that thought, and there's a question here, something that's come up for both of you. In a rural versus an urban context, what is the interplay between authority and the difference in options? So, obviously, in an urban setting, you have a lot more churches to choose from. And so, I mean, my experience has been that churches in urban settings tend to focus more on apologetics. But that's been my experience. I'm curious. I mean, and that's just touching on what you just said. I think there's a very rich vein here of the difference between a rural environment where your options are limited and there are slower rhythms, there are more traditional rhythms mm-hmm. of life versus an urban setting where there are a lot of options. And what that does, and there tends to be a different view of authority and of tradition and innovation. Are there any comments, any thoughts you have about that direction?
So I would say in general, I have found more of a home in urban churches And part of that is, again, that idea of finding your tribe if you're a bit of a weirdo. But as I've gotten older, I've come to appreciate the idea of tradition and rhythm more. And I think that's one thing that, and not necessarily even the rhythms and traditions I grew up with, but I think that's one thing that our hearts hunger for is a connectedness to each other, to a familiarity. We have liturgy in our daily lives, whether we realize it or not. I mean, in the sense of habits, like there are certain things we do every day in certain ways that are pointing us either to God or to something else. And I think not having those traditions in liturgy, and I do not go to a liturgical church, to be clear. That's one thing as kind of my mindset has changed on things that I could see happening more in a smaller church where you have, even just in where you sit and in who you see every day, sort of this familiarity with each other that you're not necessarily getting in the urban church all the time. But as far as apologetics go, yeah, I mean, I think I can see it more because you have the idea that you'll be getting, at least in a larger urban church, not in a home church necessarily. I think you do have to explain things more, knowing that you have a broader depth of knowledge in your audience or your, I don't know, is audience the right word for a church? Can you say that? Congregant. In your congregation. That's the word I'm looking for.
I'm here to help.
Yeah, thank you. Then you do in a rural church where you know everybody and you kind of have at least a baseline understanding of where they are.
I do think this is important to note that there are small urban churches. And so
this is
part
true.
Of this is that you go to a much larger church now that you're part of an urban setting.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we're I'm just saying, like,
I
knowing
said that
everybody.
Because we're actually switching to a smaller church, in part because of that idea of
yeah.
closer community and being more grounded in the area where we are. I think that idea of growing where you're planted. Because I've been to churches that are 30 minutes away from me, even in an urban setting.
Right.
Which is kind of funny since that's what we did, you know, growing up. But, I don't know where I was going with that. You're welcome, everyone.
Thank you,
Cindy.
That
was good.
That was good.
That was a complete thought. You just had to end there. You're good. You are totally fine.
You're killing it, Cindy.
Please give me more affirmation.
The correct bucket is appreciation. That's for you, Joe. We can leave that out. We don't need thank you for the feedback in there.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
So, Becky Sue, do you have any thoughts?
I wanted to add to your point about authority, and I appreciated this. If anybody's wondering where I'm pulling this from, go to our Reddit, Weary Dads, and look for the scripture crawl. I was reading.
That sounded natural.
Blah, 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 blah,
shameless plug. I was reading your point yesterday, PJ, about authority and how our particular vein of Christianity, and let me be clear, there are many. And one of the other thoughts I had about rural versus urban, and this is something Cindy's current church, which I attended for a short stint when I was with her, has really, you know, this is a big can of worms, but, you know, we're in 2021, and 10 years ago when I went to church with her, they were very passionately pursuing how the gospel points us to racial reconciliation. And in rural areas, I remember feeling that, you know, let's be clear, there was white church and there was black church. And I was like, that doesn't seem right. But that's a whole different thing in terms of communities and how communities pull in. But there's also a good level of needed, reform's not the right word, but we have to love our neighbors well. And it doesn't matter who it is. We love our neighbors well. And there's a sentence from a book I just read, God never gets the address wrong. And so that's been something very near and dear to Cindy's heart and to mine. But with that, the point about authority that, or the question about authority that PJ made, we just moved from a 4,000 member church in the heart of Orlando, and we moved about 40 minutes away to Lake County. And we realized the same thing that Cindy's saying, that it's not fair to our community. It's not fair to our church community. It's not fair to our kids. And it's not really healthy that we're not engaged with our neighbors, with the people who are surrounding us here. And we have just moved to a more rural area. We're still very close to a city. And the idea of authority, and this pairs into a little bit of consumerism as you're talking about shopping around for churches and you can find what you want and you have more options in an urban area. I feel more mindful that authority is very human. And when you choose to covenant and commit to a church body, big or small, you are embracing the good, the bad, the ugly, the beautiful. You're embracing a journey with a group of people toward Jesus, right? And the liturgies of it, the daily practice of it, these do vary across denominational lines, the integration of it, or the interpretations of scripture, all those different things. But you are linking arms with a group to pursue Christ or whatever your spiritual practice may be. We grew up with a really strong view of authority, and you brought that up in your scripture crawl yesterday, and I really appreciated that. And I can't remember exactly what you said, and I was trying to find my phone so I could look at it, but I just really cut that, Joe.
No, don't cut that. It's fine.
I know. I really appreciated your point about we honor the office, and I think we have to, if you're engaging in that kind of spirituality with people, you go deep, mess and all, like big or small. It's harder in a big church to get connected with community. I 100% agree with that. But you know, whenever you commit, be all in. That's how I feel about it. And I do enjoy the rhythms of the smaller churches, that you can get close, rub elbows, know where people sit, then take their seats.
Taking a slightly different track, in your experience, how do people talk about or see God differently in a rural context versus an urban context? So maybe we can even, I know that for Becky Sue, Mama has been a particular spiritual figure, and her rhythms and views of life, she comes to mind here. But just in general too, your thoughts on that would be much appreciated.
Some of this, again, may be different for us because of the way, because of just the differences. 10 years means a lot, apparently. I think growing up, the idea I got of God, and I don't know that I would pin this on any one particular person or message or even the church, but what I understood of God was you had to, that he wasn't, joy wasn't really a concern of his. So that quote, the glory of God is man fully alive, I think by St. Irenaeus. Did I say that right, Peach? Did I say it?
I don't know. I've only ever read it. Not a lot of people are like, so what have you read in St. Irenaeus? Irenaeus? Uranus, you know. Yeah.
Wow.
I typically don't read there. Anyway, so...
That planet name is literally the worst.
Oh,
I remember
it's
as a
best.
Kid being like Uranus, and I was like, haha, I'm going to change it. Uranus. Oh, no, that's no, literally, no, yeah. No.
Oh, and I've heard people call it like Uranus, and I'm like, you're not making it any better. Just say it the way everyone wants to say it. Anyway, so.
So you're reading Uranus.
Yes, I'm reading. No, I'm reading Uranus. Cut that, Joe.
Klingons.
No, so...
Okay, guys, we need to make Joe cut everything. It's okay. It's a, trust me. You,
I'm just...
Compared to a lot of my other guests, like...
I've only said it
pretty,
once.
You guys are pretty
one
mild.
Time to say it. No. So, my mom listens to this.
Joe, I want that for the highlight.
You only get one shot. Did not miss your chance.
Oh, my God. Oh,
stop. Stop. I have a point, and I'm going to make it as soon as I remember what it was.
You were talking about man fully alive?
Oh, yes. No. So what I was saying was growing up, the idea of God I got was that you had to serve him and glorify him, and you were going to be miserable doing it. Yeah. So I didn't have this idea of like...
Becky's shaking her head, yes.
Yes, she is. She is. And I was giving her a look that said, don't interrupt me, you hussy. Heifer is probably the more accurate description here.
Oh, no.
So, back to my point. No. So,
Braun.
I'm gonna punch you in the baby maker.
This is the best podcast ever.
Becky, it helps you tuck into the mic, not into the side of it.
This is the best podcast ever.
He's so silly. So, I knew that we were supposed to love God and love Jesus, and I did. I had a connection with him, but it wasn't until I went through some pretty traumatic events in my early 20s where I realized that, A, Jesus was with me, and he liked who he had made me to be. I'm not talking about sin. I'm not talking about, you know, times I cut someone off and yell at them on the freeway.
Calling him a hussy.
He likes that. I'm just kidding. Because it was with love. It was a love.
It was with love.
So this idea that who he made me to be, that is like the, not the sinful desires, but the desires he put in me were part of who he made me to be. And that part of following him was fostering those things. And that there was joy and gladness, you know, that Christian hedonism idea. That was revolutionary for me. And again, I don't know how much of that was the church that I grew up in and how much was just a twisted view I had, or the fact that there weren't people who I saw finding joy following Jesus, probably more my age than older people. I mean, maybe there were, but I wasn't hanging out with adults. I was hanging out with kids my age, or, you know, looking at them hanging out. So... I did have friends, to be clear, a few. So when I moved to an urban...
Thank you for the reassurance.
Honest, I had some friends. That sounds...
And it's that I do know, it's Christian hedonism.
Hedonism. Oh,
and I am curious. Where,
why did I say hedonism? I say hedonism normally.
Was John Piper actually helpful with that, or are you just borrowing his term?
I'm borrowing his term. I've read a few John Piper books.
How did you find that whole concept? Was that something you found in urban context?
Yeah, it was. It was. I would say the seeds of it started actually in a rural context, because I was working at a children's home in a rural area. I didn't even have a church home at that point, really. But when I moved to an urban environment and got plugged in with community really for the first time in my life, like, and learned what it was to link arms with people, that was when I started to experience people who loved Jesus and weren't miserable about it. And it was a joy to follow him, and he cared about, like, in their mind, Jesus cared about the things I cared about, like story and art, and more than just, you just have to suck it up and do what you have to do. There was a deeper connection, a deeper joy to be found. And worshiping God wasn't just going to church on Sundays. It was a whole life experience that encapsulated beauty and things that just, I think that's a big difference. And again, maybe not necessarily all rural churches, but beauty and art being important as part of worship. So I saw people dance in church, like interpretive dance. And I was like, this is a thing? It was really neat.
That's awesome.
It was definitely not something I would have ever, you know, expected to see in my home church.
I think one of the biggest things that I'm seeing is the difference in resources and the difference in options is probably the biggest difference I've noticed in your discussions of this. So for instance, like obviously community has always played a major part of spirituality. And for you, you didn't experience that connection until you found a place where you could, in an urban setting where you could find people. Whereas you would have been a little bit more of an outcast if you'd always stayed rural. And
yes.
Same thing with the experience of art. You can definitely have art in a rural setting, but the odds of you're just going to have more expressions of art and more diversity of art in an urban setting because you have more people around and there's it. So it just makes a tremendous difference. Even in a smaller church in an urban setting, you have access to more options. Mm-hmm. And from everything I'm hearing from you guys, I think that you gals, that is the central difference. And so as we talk about options, what are the benefits of having more options? And what are the pros of having more options? And what are the cons of having more options? And what are the benefits of having less options and the cons of having less options?
I'm actually going to speak to the cons of having more options because I have felt that keenly over this pandemic. The problem with having more options is it's so easy to say yes to everything when you really need to say no to some things. There's this event, there's this party, there's, especially if, for instance, I've been living in Memphis for, I don't even remember how many years, but 15-ish plus. And so you get to know a lot of people, you get to know a lot of things. I am guilty of a little bit of FOMO sometimes, especially when I was younger. And so when there is that much to do, that much to experience, if you don't have a clear vision of what your priorities are, what your vision is, it's really easy to get lost in all those options and do all the things and not have a sort of peaceful, centered, restful, I am missing a word here that was going to come to me eventually. Soul in the middle of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, having access to everything is great, but doing everything is not. And I think there is something to be said for a bit of minimalism. So,
I would agree with that, Cindy. And it's interesting that the first thing that came to my mind was also a con. With the many options too, I think, and by nature of a lot of urban settings, people who, well, this isn't necessarily true, but as you've had people who will stay in a city for a very long time. But with more options, there is more opportunity to jump from one to the other. And there are good things and bad things in that, right? Or I say pros and cons in that in and of itself. One of the things that is so unique about a rural church, and it's something that is true. I just saw on Facebook today, the pastor who I grew up with shared from 11 years ago when they gave a 20-year ministry anniversary video. They'd put that together. And I was thinking about how rare and special that is to have a single pastor for 20 plus. I think he served there for 30 years. And the kind of community that can be built over that extended lifelong period of time, it's just different. And you can create some amazing, and you have more exposure, and you have, you can go deeper with the diversity of art, and you add a lot of roundedness by, you know, having a larger community, or, you know, even going to multiple, if you've gone to multiple churches in the same city, and you experience you rub shoulders with a larger group of people, and there's opportunities that arise from that. There's sharpening, right? In terms of, hey, I wasn't aware of that. Like, you learn some new, you might learn of a new theologian, or you learn how to say Irenaeus, right? Like, there's lots of things that can happen from that. But it's
Becky Sue flexing on all of us.
I have no idea if that's how you say it, right? Again, nerd alert. We're just readers. But in the longevity of small communities is pretty interesting. Even the church that we're attending now, the PJ shared about how the pastor, the assistant pastor, had coached the interim or the
pastor. He was his English teacher.
He was his English teacher. That's right. And discipled him, and now he's going into ministry with him, which is a beautiful thing.
The intern is now 36 or 37, and the assistant pastor has been in the same area and taught him when he was in 10th grade.
Yeah, yeah, which is really incredible. So, you know, pros and cons, they're different. But I agree with Cindy that the soul in the center of it, creating that minimalism, that space, because at the end of the day, it's about Jesus. It's about encountering and walking with him in that. And he calls each of us to different things, just like, you know, Peter and Paul, like, you're minister to the Jews and you're to the Gentiles. And then Stephen in between, which was part of our sermon the other week, you know, bridging that gap. And so the bloom where we planted point that you made a while back, Cindy, I think is so poignant in this discussion, because there's also that piece where we need both cities and rural communities for a healthy society to thrive, even food supply and hubs. There's so much beyond just the church discussion here, but definitely how we engage Christ in both of those localities is so important.
So we both gave cons. I'm going to give a pro really quickly. And one of the things I've really appreciated, Becky, you touched earlier on the idea of racial reconciliation. Mm. One of the things that has been really beautiful about being in a more diverse area, I'm going to speak about your options of people, is as I've gotten to know people who have different backgrounds from me, ethnically, socioeconomically, even just, you know, where you went to school, public school versus private school versus Christian school. Mm-hmm. It's been really beautiful to see that not everyone has had the same experience. Mm. And at the same time, people who I might have assumed had very different experiences had some of the same experiences I did.
The plastic Cool Whip containers.
Country Crock.
Country Crock, yes. Yeah,
well,
let's be
cool
clear.
Too. Honestly, well, no, any plastic cool container.
Yes, reused for leftovers.
That you bought from the store was reused. Might show up. It's always a surprise what you're going to find in the fridge. And so that's one of the things that has been really, and not just in the sense of like what I have gained from it, but in the empathy and understanding that my experiences, my life, the things I've taught, that has not been the same for everyone else. Mm-mm. And I think it's easy to read that on paper and say, oh, yes, of course, not everybody's experiences are the same. But it's the difference between head knowledge and experiential knowledge until you've actually sat with someone and listened to what they had to say and this is a small example. We were in a community group and we would all bring like food for a potluck. And I had never heard that this sort of like rule that if you bring food to a potluck, you leave it for the host. Like growing up, everybody brings their food and then they take it away when they're done. And one of the ladies that we were in community with was like, I was almost offended when people took their food away because you're supposed to leave the food. And it was just a difference in, and this wasn't even an ethnic difference because other people were like, what? So just small thing, but something I would never even have thought of. So
cultural differences.
Yeah. Cultural. Yeah. So,
and even, and I would even say a pro too, you know, this is interesting. You say that about the taking the food away. You brought to mind, Lisa, my mother-in-law, and I were invited. She was neighbors with a Muslim family from Libya. And we became good friends with the oldest daughter.
Definitely would not have happened in a rural context.
No, not
or
at all.
Very, very unlikely, I should
very
say.
Very unlikely,
that.
Yes. Like, even by nature of how close the houses were, mm-hmm. it made this such a natural relationship because we would walk the dogs and they would be out and playing and we'd start talking and we just hit it off. And she was is a precious woman, beautiful mama now, like amazing. And we knew her before she was betrothed to be married. And so she was in college at the time, we were invited to her wedding and it was such a beautiful experience. And it was a beautiful welcoming, a moment of hospitality because they opened up their arms to us and said, hey, we want you to come into this. I mean, really an intimate occasion, right? And it was just neighbors. And we were the only people there who did not share the same faith. And I remember one of the older ladies coming up to us and saying, see, like, we're not like what the news said. And it just broke my mm-hmm. heart. Because I said, absolutely not. In many ways, there was such a beautiful commonality of ground in that. They were seeking the same type of peace and hub. And albeit, like, you know, we had conversations about faith. We had conversations about who God is and the differences, like what they believe Jesus to be and vice versa, you know. And those were good discussions, but they were couched in love and relationship. They were couched around what you said, Cindy, mm-hmm. that empathetic, hey, we can sit at the table and break bread.
Yeah.
It's a big deal. And you don't, you know. We had one neighbor when we moved to the farm, and they didn't like us. They still don't. So yeah, I didn't have as many of those opportunities. And I think in different parts of a rural community, you really do. And some of that, again, goes back to family stuff where you're how engaged you are. And that's something where even as we're in a more rural area, in a gated community, let's be real.
We're not really rural right now.
True.
We're more suburban.
True.
Which is different
slightly
because
different, yeah.
we have lots of neighbors.
We have lots of neighbors.
But we still have space.
Yes.
I just wanted to
clarify.
Yeah.
That's an important clarification.
And even the church that we are going to now is not... It's an in-between.
Yes.
But that's been part of the Industrial Revolution, people transitioning to urban centers. Even mm-hmm. Mount Dora, we are part of this move towards... there's a lot of people who have moved to Mount Dora in the last pandemic season because they can work from home. And Mount Dora is slowly... and, you know, people disagree on it, but I think for the most part, people do agree. So there will be some who strongly disagree, but I think most would agree that Mount Dora is becoming a suburb
yes.
of Orlando.
I would agree with that.
Which is crazy how far away it is.
Yes.
Just because people are spreading out because they can work from home.
Mm.
And like a subtext for this entire conversation is the technological differences.
Yes.
And the way that, like, I mean... You had to be able to grow enough to feed people.
Yes.
And that wasn't possible until the Industrial Revolution
yeah.
for people to live in cities.
Yes.
So you could bring food in.
Yes. Yeah.
And even being able to keep that food intact until it's brought in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I just wanted to provide that kind of context.
Yeah. It was a very helpful point. And there are things that I think because food is brought into a city, it's so interesting. You mentioned Mama earlier, and I'm just thinking about Mama and our mom canning food that they grew in the garden. And, you know, it seems like a far cry.
And when they
the
say
past.
Garden, they're talking about something like when a city person says, when an urban person says garden, they're thinking about like a big garden for an urban person is an 8x8 foot plot.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're talking about Mama and
Ma Ra's,
we're talking about
an acre.
Yes.
An acre.
Like, and they call that a garden. Whereas in urban settings, like they're literally like semi calling it, like it's a communal garden and they're thinking semi like it's a farm and it's like 100 feet by 50 feet. And I think that makes a difference for rhythms, obviously.
Of course. Yeah.
Right. And I think that provides certain, I know that in my own life, I hadn't been to the ocean in a while and just experiencing like here is something that there is so much I have control over in this small suburban setting. Mm. And then going into the ocean and just realizing from any kind of spirituality, mm-hmm. the wonder exists when you're more closely attached to nature.
Mm. Yes.
I love that you said that because when you were talking about the size of the acreage and that sort of thing and the rhythms, I think my prayer life was birthed from 5 a.m. wake ups before school to go feed and clean out the chicken water and grab the mail and do a couple farm chores.
What's the chicken water?
Also, I did not have this experience at all.
The 10-year difference. Well, and that's what's interesting.
I had no idea you did this.
That was my morning routine for several years. And then at 11 o'clock at night, I raised cows. Again, 10 years difference. We had moved to the farm with all the acreage. And so I wasn't going to drive to go get a job, 45 minutes and make minimum wage. So I took out a loan and I bought 4 cows and raised them and sold them and used the acreage to...
And broke your finger catching them after they broke out of the fence.
Right off the highway.
How did you get out of working for Dad? That's what I need to know.
Oh, I did both. I mean, come on. Yeah,
Just making sure.
I got out of it?
Heck no. Just making sure.
Heck no, techno. Yeah, there was no getting out of that. So, but he helped me, so I appreciated that. And I think it was easier because, it's the only kid around. So, with that, though, those early mornings, watching the sun rise, being connected to nature, those are still things that I treasure very near and dear to my heart. There were things where I said, wow, this is, it's truly grounded. It's truly something that if you don't do it, it doesn't get done. And cleaning out the chicken water means chickens are gross, so they have a water trough, and you have to clean it every day because they don't know where the bathroom is. So let's just leave it at that and I won't get gross. So
they poop in the water.
Exactly. They defecate in the water and you got to rinse it and you got to feed them other stuff. So
as we wrap up here and feel free to take a second to think about this, but at what, during what specific moments or rituals did you feel closest to God? In an urban context, and at what specific moments or rituals did you feel closest to God in a rural context? And that can be in church or out of church, or maybe you want to do out of church and in church for each of those. Whatever you feel comfortable sharing.
I think in an urban setting, well, in church, I have probably felt closer to God in church in an urban setting. Hmm. No, not probably. I definitely have felt closer to God in church in an urban setting than I did in a rural setting. That's not to say there weren't moments where I felt God's presence move. There was a revival, I think, most pivotal... I think that was that's probably the experience I remember most where I felt God was a revival one Sunday night where some older men in the church were confessing some sin. And it was beautiful. It was probably the first example of real transparency I'd seen. And it was actually in a rural church. Mm. And that was an experience I still remember, like just moving my heart toward God. But for the most part, if I were to look at it as a whole, it would be in an urban church where I have felt the Spirit move most, where I have felt closest to God. At the same time, sort of in that solitude vein, in that personal relationship with God, outside of that corporate closeness, it would be in the woods. Mm. There is something about being outdoors that really helps me feel connected to God. I mean, I think we're designed that way. So.
Hmm.
And in a rural setting, being outside at night, not a werewolf, but I remember.
But like, howling at the moon.
That has happened. I did not necessarily feel connected to God in that moment. It was just a lot of fun.
It's true, folks.
Yes, the moon hell. Yeah. We had horses. So when we moved to, when I was 15 and we moved out, I remember like being with the horses at night and the moon. Like that's an experience you're not, I would never be able to recreate in an urban setting. It's just being outside at night, you know, with the moon and the horses and just feeling peaceful.
Even aside from a spirituality, because it wasn't a spiritual experience. But I remember going camping, and there was still too much light pollution. I went camping
It's so frustrating.
I went camping with some guys who had lived in the city most of their life. And I was definitely more of a city boy, moved out to a rural setting, which is where I met Becky Sue for college. And I got to see the Milky Way for the first time in distinct points of light. And it was overwhelming. Mm-hmm. I never realized how many stars there were. I didn't realize how they could literally be distinct and yet create a solid trail. And they actually made fun of me because I was like, oh, we might be able to see it. And all we saw was this blur. And even that was overwhelming for them. And so like, there's just a distinct difference. I mean, they should have made fun of me because I was like way too excited about it. Like, I don't want to like.
Can you ever be too excited about stars?
I kept hoping because we were staying up late to see them. And then I realized it was just not going to get any better. And that we were literally at that point 45 minutes away from the city. And it was the light pollution was still, I mean, and some of that is like the darkness of the night and stuff like that. But I remember being in Wisconsin, even the nearest city was small, and laying down in my driveway and seeing a solid band of stars. That's the Milky Way.
Yeah.
There's no explanation of those kind of experiences.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there are explanations, but they don't do justice to the experience.
No.
It's interesting, Cindy, because in PJ, both of those, right? You're in an urban church surrounded by people worshiping and doing interpretive dance and having a movement.
I personally do not dance, to be clear. In church.
I wish you would.
In church. I clarified in church.
You definitely do dance. I think the answer, the question is, do you dance well? And that's because I've definitely seen you dance.
Well, I can't speak to that because I don't want to embarrass myself.
I'll have John on for the next podcast.
Oh, yeah. That's a very different
that's
situation.
Cindy's husband.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. What's interesting, because both of those things give a sense of our place. Right? In the here I am in a group of people and this is how I fit in and how we are working together, linking arms to create impact in the city. And then here I am where the sky is so dark and the brightness of those stars. And let's be clear, the stars in Dunbar, Wisconsin and Newville, Alabama are like nothing else.
Right.
They're beautiful things. Even the sunsets. There's something different about seeing a sunset over, you know, an empty landscape versus over the 1,000 houses in our subdivision, you know, like.
And the Publix.
And the Publix. It's a different feel. And both of those create these moments of awe and wonder where we go, okay, I'm pretty small. I'm pretty small. And there's something pretty big, you know?
I'm pretty small, but I have a place in this.
And I have a place in it. Yes. And I have a place. 100% agree with that. And I think going back to the liturgy and the rhythms, you know, getting up early, I mentioned getting up early with the chickens in an urban setting, biking, you know, I would bike through the urban trails. And those were sweet moments of peace and communion for me. Those were the ways that I would reconnect on an individual level with God. And it's interesting. And I would bike to a lake and just sit and look. And so I still find myself craving and seeking out places of nature. And yet, you know, those moments of corporate worship where everyone, you know, in a small congregation, when everyone sings together, and I love it in those old country churches, even Mama's church, you know, you have the old off-tune piano and the lady singing, and there's like 12 of 12 people busting out their lungs, you know, just letting out. And that's a beautiful thing. And then when you're in a room of 1,000 people lifting their voices together or saying the creeds together, whatever your tradition may be, these are beautiful moments. And I think at the core of all of it, it's a sense of, for me, I feel more keen on being grateful for each of those things in their place. Mm.
Thank you guys so much. This has been an honor and a treat. And I really appreciate the insight you've given us and the transparency and genuineness.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you.